Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Day 180 served up by Wendy's. Greg Cosell joins us every Wednesday at this time. Presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Make the right move by choosing Huffaker. Visit them online, thgtn.com, or call 833-THG-NASH. What's up, Greg?
Jonathan, what's happening? Hey, we never talked about the draft being in Nashville next year. That's pretty cool.
And maybe we'll have the option of having you in Nashville for the draft. I know you normally don't attend the draft, but
well,
maybe
if you guys want to let me know what hotel I'll be in, I'll be happy to be there.
Okay. Let us work on that, Greg.
Hey, I'm good to go. You know how much I love Nashville.
There is a couch in this studio also, if you want a place to crash out of here. You can walk right down to the draft.
I don't want to take your spot, Chuck.
That's right. I'm homeless.
Greg Cosell with us. We've been recapping the drafts with Greg each week, division by division. Today, the AFC East. And, Greg, there are top young quarterbacks selected very high in this draft to discuss within this division. Let's start with the New York Jets, who traded up to the third pick way before the night of the draft. And we knew they wanted a quarterback based on what they did to trade up with the Colts. But not many people, probably including Jets decision makers, thought they would end up having the option of selecting Sam Darnold. They have Josh McCown on a one-year contract, but Darnold is going to be the guy sooner than later. But here's my question. Jeremy Bates is the new offensive coordinator in New York. Will he need to approach Darnold the same way Jim Bob Cooter has coached Matthew Stafford, reeling him in a bit with the way he approaches the overall structure of the offense?
Well, that would be my point of view. You know, different coaches have different philosophies about quarterbacks who do have outside of structure, off-schedule ability. I'm from the old school, and I tend to believe that you must learn the position from a real discipline perspective first, that's where the starting point is. I always view outside of structure as a parachute. That's the last thing you should be doing. That's not something to encourage. But that's a philosophy. That's my particular philosophy based on my background and who I've learned the position from. Jeremy Bates, I think he's a younger coach. I don't know his philosophy. I do believe, and I could be wrong, but I do believe the Jets do not have a quarterback coach. That always scares me a little bit with a young quarterback. So Jeremy Bates is a guy who's thought of extremely highly in this business. Some think he's along the lines of Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan at that level. If that's the case, then Darnold's in a great spot. But I think you have to teach him really the disciplined nature of the position before you say, hey, we want Sam. We don't want to stop Sam from doing what Sam does. I think you always have to be careful with that.
Darnold turned the ball over 22 times last season, which was tied for the most in FBS. 13 of those 22 were interceptions. I know not every interception is the same. Some are not even on the quarterback, but some are just because of poor mechanics. Where does he need work?
Well, he certainly needs work with his lower body mechanics. He has a tendency to step into the bucket. Think of a baseball hitter stepping, you know, into the bucket, you know, away from the pitcher. Sam Darnold has a tendency to do that, which negatively impacts your accuracy and your velocity. Speaking of interceptions, I did look at all of his interceptions, and each one has to be looked at individually. But he did have an issue at times, I thought, with his vision in the middle of the field between the numbers. That's something they'll have to work on. But to me, there was a reckless, loose, undisciplined nature to his game that needs to be reined in, not encouraged.
They also signed Teddy Bridgewater, and I know off-season stuff is off-season stuff, and it's filled with hope and good reports all over, but the reports on Teddy Bridgewater have been very encouraging. I'm thinking that odds are if he gets himself some time here and maybe gets out of there in a year and gets himself into another starting situation.
Yeah, I mean, Bridgewater, I think when he was in Minnesota, you know, he struck me, and I thought this way when he came out of Louisville as well, but he struck me as, at his best, would be a very efficient player. I hate to use the term system quarterback, but theoretically that's what he is. But he was efficient. He didn't turn the ball over. I thought over time he would probably develop into a pretty solid player. We'll see if he can get back to that. My guess is that's not going to happen with the Jets. They drafted Sam Darnold with a third pick in the draft, and they traded up to get to that pick. So Teddy Bridgewater will not be the quarterback of the New York Jets.
Greg, plenty to discuss with the Buffalo Bills. It starts with their decision on Josh Allen. They had their pick of Allen or Rosen. They traded up to pick 7 to grab Allen. This had to be a pick all about offensive system, overall fit, and the relationship that they believe they had and will build over time with Allen. Does his talent fit well with the offensive scheme in Buffalo?
Well, again, we don't know what their feeling was about Josh Rosen and the so-called personality, which some people spoke a lot about. But if you're just looking at it from a football standpoint, I think what Josh Allen gives you is he certainly has a big arm. There's no question about that. His arm is as powerful as anybody's. If you're going to start your offense with the run game and the quarterback under center, which I believe they'll do with LeSean McCoy and Chris Ivory, then you're dealing with a situation where a lot of your downfield throws ideally will come off play action out of base personnel packages, out of probably base formation looks, and you're going to try to hit what we call shot plays down the field. Josh Allen has done that in college. He lined up under center. He turned his back to the defense in play action, which is a learned trait. So he's someone they probably feel fits what they want their approach to be offensively.
I think people hear arm strength and they also hear arm talent, but those are two different aspects of playing quarterback. When it comes to accuracy and ball placement, where does Allen need work?
Yeah, he's the classic distinction between those two terms, Jonathan. Because his arm strength, his ability to throw the ball with power and velocity, is off the charts, high level. Arm talent, I always think of as the subtleties of the position, touch, timing, precise ball placement. Those are the areas in which Josh Allen needs work.
Tremaine Edmonds was another first-round selection for the Bills, and I've noticed him working as a middle linebacker in McDermott's 4-3 defense.
Yeah.
Do you like that for him?
Well, I think he sees Edmonds with his size and his movement ideally as their Luke Kuechly down the road. I don't know if he's ready to do that as a rookie, but I think that's why he was drafted, because that kind of size, that kind of speed, that kind of movement, you just don't see very often. I mean, I know scouts who think that he was a no-brainer, that he was one of the top five players in the draft, just looking at his skill set. So, you know, I think that that's the way Sean McDermott sees it. And if he can the quicker he can get to that, assuming he can get to that point, then that would be terrific for them, because that player in that defense and a Sean McDermott defense is a critical piece.
Harrison Phillips was drafted to be the eventual replacement for Kyle Williams. Does Phillips remind you of Williams at all on the defensive line?
He did. In fact, I made that point in my notes when I did Phillips, obviously not having any idea where he'd get drafted. I thought that Phillips is he's a very strong player. He's a former wrestler. I mean, I saw him at the combine. His chest is the size of Texas. I mean, he is a big, big man. And he's more athletic than you think. He's not explosive or bendy or flexible, but he's quicker than you think. And I think over time, as happened with Kyle Williams, he could develop into a more than functional inside pass rusher. I don't think that'll happen early in his career, but I think that could happen over time.
Greg, let's get to the New England Patriots. It's been discussed that the Patriots liked Rashawn Evans. The Titans moved ahead of New England and Pittsburgh to draft him. So the Patriots end up with Isaiah Wynn at pick 23. And I guess it should be no surprise that I believe that the Titans all really liked Isaiah Wynn as well and his value at the bottom of the first round. The Patriots had to address their offensive line early. Do you see Wynn as a long-term answer at left tackle?
Jonathan, I loved Isaiah Wynn on tape, and I thought that he played left tackle better than any other prospect I studied and evaluated this year. There'll be some who'll say he's not a left tackle because he's 6'2 and three quarters, which is considered short by NFL standards. He does have long arms. Some believe in that. But I thought that he was the best left tackle prospect in this draft. Obviously, others disagreed. The McGlinchey was taken at 9. But I loved Isaiah Wynn, and I loved the way he played. Very, very competitive. But I got to tell you, I loved their first three picks. Then they drafted Sony Michel, and then they drafted Duke Dawson. I can only tell you how I feel about them, and you know how I feel about Sony Michel. Yep. We've talked about him numerous times. I really like him as a back. Clearly, they do as well, because I believe it was the first time they've taken a back in the first round since Lawrence Maroney, and that's a long time ago. So they clearly felt Michel. I don't think they drafted him in the first round to give him the ball three or four times a game. And then Duke Dawson, you know, he's a Florida State kid. And
Florida.
And I loved him on tape. He was one of my most favorite players to watch. The kind of guy he reminded me of, the player who came to mind watching Duke Dawson was Chris Harris of the Broncos. And Harris is a very good NFL player. Most people probably see Dawson inside in the slot, and I think that's where he'll ultimately play. But like Chris Harris, I think Dawson could play outside at times in your base defense, which is what he did at Florida, and then move inside in your sub packages. But I thought he was a terrific prospect as well.
Here's what I liked about Dawson, Greg. He was a part of a recruiting class the same year as Tease Tabor and Quincy Wilson.
Yep.
And that forced him to play other positions in the secondary, because Tabor and Wilson had it locked down on the outside.
Yeah.
And that made him more versatile. That made him more valuable. And that's why a lot of people see him as a nickel.
Yeah, and they see him as well as a nickel because of his size. You know, he's under 5'11". He's 197 pounds. You know, theoretically, could he play on the outside? They don't see him as an outside guy because he's not explosive. You know, he doesn't have that twitch we all like to talk about, that sudden movement. But I think he's physical. He's competitive. I think he could play on the outside. Not every snap, but I think he theoretically could. Now, he followed Brian Poole at Florida in that position, sort of in the slot, and Brian Poole was an undrafted player who's been the starting nickel slot corner for the Falcons for the last 2 years and has played extremely well, and Duke Dawson is a significantly better prospect.
One more, you mentioned Sony Michel, and everyone immediately says, oh, that's the guy who's going to fill the role for Deion Lewis, who left to go to Tennessee, but by drafting him where they did, Greg, aren't they saying that he's going to be more than just the Lewis role within the offense?
You would think. Clearly, they have a lot of backs presently on their roster, including our buddy Ralph Webb from Vanderbilt, who I was surprised was not drafted, but hey, maybe that's just me. But they've got Rex Burkhead. They've got Jeremy Hill. Everybody assumes Gillislee's gone. We know James White's making the team. He's not a runner. He's a receiver. So it's really, to me, comes down to Sony Michel versus Jeremy Hill, because there was a time Jeremy Hill looked like he'd be a very nice back in this league at 230-plus pounds, but it hasn't worked out. So I don't know where they stand on Jeremy Hill, but I think Sony Michel's a better runner than Jeremy Hill.
Greg Cosell with us, presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty.
It sure seems like in Miami, it's a do-or-die time for Ryan Tannehill. Missed last year after too late surgery.
Yeah.
They were looking at some quarterbacks in the draft. I think Albert Breer wrote that Gase sat him down early and said, don't pay any attention to any of that. You're our guy no matter what we do heading forward. And Tannehill kind of said, don't waste a pick. What's a reasonable expectation for them with him now?
Well, you know, I think you're looking at a quarterback who theoretically has not had a lot of experience in Adam Gase's offense, so the feeling is that now with more and more experience, he'll become a more efficient player. Tannehill's a guy that's been a relatively solid NFL quarterback, probably fitting into that sort of Andy Dalton category, that he's kind of a mid-range guy right now. You can line up and you can play with him. You can win games. He's a solid NFL quarterback, and they're looking for him now to become a more consistent player and become a better player. He's a pretty talented guy. So, you know, that's what they're hoping now within the context of this offense. They made a specific pick in Mike Gesicki. That's a very specific pick for an Adam Gase offense because he's a big believer in lining up three wide receivers to one side of the formation and a tight end, an athletic tight end, as the single receiver to the other side, and he has not had that player. Mike Gesicki now gives him that player.
Landry not in that receiver mix where Stills, Parker, and newcomer Danny Amendola are the top trio. Does he have enough to throw to there?
Well, they've still been waiting for Parker, who was a first-round pick in 2015, who's looks, if you just look at him, like A.J. Green, but he has not become that kind of player. The other receiver I would just keep in mind, because I think he's an interesting mixed player, is Albert Wilson, who's a free agent arrival from the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think he's a sort of a solid kind of pro. So they really have four receivers now, plus this Jakeem Grant kid, who's a very explosive guy and is probably more of a package player. But, yeah, I mean, I think they expect their pass game to take a major step forward.
What is Laremy Tunsil now, and how crucial is he?
Yeah.
Do we know what he's going to be yet?
No, and that's a great question, Paul, because I can't sit here and tell you I've seen every snap in his 2 years. Obviously, his first year he played guard. Last year he played tackle. I probably saw three-quarters of the games. I did not feel, and I don't know how they graded him, but I did not feel he played consistently to the level of his athletic talent. Now, I don't know if that's just a learning curve in his first year playing the left tackle position in the NFL, and then he'll play much better this year. He's certainly talented, as you guys know, being an SEC player, but I don't think he played to that level anywhere near as consistently as they hoped.
Cameron Wake and Robert Quinn probably still rank as a pretty good pass rushing duo, but Ndamukong Suh no longer in between them. How does his absence change who they are defensively?
Well, I think they're two inside guys they feel good about. Jordan Phillips was a second-round pick in 2015, really big kid and athletic. And then Davin Godshaw from LSU is a player I really liked, and I thought he flashed last year. They also still have Charles Harris, who, you know, is a very, very athletic kid. They've actually got a pretty good D-line rotation, both at D-end and inside. So it'll be very interesting. Robert Quinn, at his best, and we don't know if he still can do that, was such a dynamic edge player. You know, Wake's an older player now. I think they're hoping that Charles Harris can sort of work in even more this year and become a bigger factor. But this is they've got a bunch of players, edge players, who are have played in this league and have been functionally good players.
Miami goes with Minka Fitzpatrick with their top pick, Greg.
Yeah.
And I know you liked him. You like his versatility. I think an underrated part of his game is on pass rush at Alabama, and how they would use him within the Crimson Tide defense. I'm curious what you think about the versatility in all aspects, not just in coverage.
Well, he played three positions, Jonathan, at Alabama. He played safety to the field in their base defense. He played slot corner in their nickel defense. And in their dime defense, he played that sort of hybrid linebacker safety position and was a really good blitzer. My assumption is he'll be, I think, a slot corner to begin with. And then they'll figure out what else he is. I don't think he's going to start at safety for them because they've got Rashard Jones and T.J. McDonald. So I don't think he's going to be a starting safety for them. So I assume he'll start in the slot, and then if they'll see how Cordero Tankersley, the Clemson kid, plays at on the outside. Tony Lepet, I think, is back as well. I think the corner position opposite Xavien Howard will be kind of up for grabs, and I assume Fitzpatrick might be able to get into that mix.
Did you like Jerome Baker in the draft out of Ohio State?
I liked him for what he is, which is a super athletic, almost built like a safety kind of linebacker, fits the NFL in your sub packages. And they needed that because they need speed at linebacker. They don't have speed at linebacker. If you look at, you know, Kiko Alonso, Raekwon McMillan now will be back, the Ohio State kid they drafted the year before. Stephon Anthony is there. Another Clemson kid. There's no speed. They needed an athletic linebacker.
Greg, thank you as always. A great report here on this division, and we'll continue next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Yep.